Welcome to another deep dive. Today we're looking into a case that's a really good example of how in the legal world, things are not always what they seem.
Oh, absolutely.
We're going to be diving into State v. Weaver, and this is an important case out of Iowa.
Yes.
It focuses on new evidence that came out in a shaken baby syndrome case.
Yeah.
And the power of a whispered conversation that happened years after what everyone thought was a done deal.
Yeah, you know, what's really interesting about this case is how it really forces us to challenge our assumptions about what we consider to be solid evidence and what we think about justice.
Yeah.
It all centers around Mary Weaver, who was initially convicted of murdering a baby who was in her care, 11-month-old Melissa Mathis.
Oh, wow. So it sounds like a really sad case.
Yeah.
And I'm going to guess that the prosecution presented a pretty strong case, right? I mean, what made this conviction seem like it was such a slam dunk at the time?
Right. Well, you know, the initial autopsy pointed to shaken baby syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And that diagnosis often, you know, carries this really strong implication of abuse.
Right.
And along with, you know, there being no other explanation at the time, it seems really clear cut. But as we'll see, the diagnosis isn't always as straightforward as it might seem.
That's interesting. So you're saying there's more to this shaken baby syndrome diagnosis than we might think. I think a lot of our listeners are probably thinking like, wait a minute, if a baby was shaken, isn't that pretty damning evidence?
Yeah. And I think that's why this case is so interesting, is because the medical community has been having a lot of discussion around shaken baby syndrome.
Okay.
And some experts argue that the symptoms that are associated with it can actually be caused by other factors, like maybe certain underlying medical conditions or even accidental injuries.
Okay.
And this case really highlights how complex those medical diagnoses can be and how important it is to consider all the possibilities.
Wow. So the medical evidence might not have been as clear-cut as everyone initially thought then, but what was it that really changed the story in this case? What happened that made the court question the initial conviction?
The turning point came years later when new witnesses came forward with a piece of information that completely changed the game.
Okay.
These witnesses said they heard Melissa's mother admit that the baby had hit her head really hard on a coffee table on the morning that she died and had even been knocked unconscious for a bit.
Oh, wow.
And here's the kicker. This happened before Melissa was even in Mary Weaver's care.
Hold on. So the baby had a significant head injury before being left with Mary Weaver. That brings up so many questions. Could that injury have been the actual cause of death? And why are these witnesses coming forward years after the fact?
Exactly. Those are exactly the questions that the court had to grapple with.
Yeah.
This new information, while, you know, it was compelling, presented a major legal hurdle. It was hearsay.
Right.
And as you know, hearsay is generally inadmissible in court.
Right. Okay. I can see where this is going. For those of our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with legal procedures, can you give us a quick explanation of why hearsay is usually not allowed in court?
Sure. The reason courts are so wary of hearsay is that it's just inherently unreliable.
Yeah.
You know, think about it. We're talking about secondhand information.
Right.
A story being passed from one person to another. And there's always that risk of misinterpretations or exaggerations or even somebody just making something up.
Uh-huh.
And plus, the original source of the statement, they're not available for cross-examination.
Right.
So it's hard to know if they're credible or what the context of their statement was.
That makes sense. So how did this coffee table story, as you called it, how did that end up playing such an important role in this case? Did the court just kind of decide to ignore the rules?
Not exactly. While courts are understandably very cautious about hearsay, there are exceptions.
Okay.
And this case really hinges on a specific exception that's called the residual hearsay exception.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What is this residual hearsay exception, and how did it apply to State v. Weaver?
Essentially, the residual hearsay exception allows for hearsay to be admitted if it meets certain very strict criteria.
Okay. It has to be, you know, demonstrably trustworthy, meaning the court needs to be convinced that the information is reliable.
Right.
It also has to be more probative than any other evidence that's available.
Okay.
Meaning it has to be crucial to the case and likely to actually influence the outcome.
Uh-huh.
And finally, admitting the hearsay has to serve the interests of justice.
So the court had to be absolutely sure that this hearsay was both reliable and essential to the case. How did they figure that out in this situation?
Right. Well, the court looked very carefully at the witnesses, their backgrounds, and any possible motives.
Uh-huh.
And ultimately, they determined that the witnesses were credible and that they didn't seem to have a reason to lie.
Come here.
Their testimonies were consistent, they were detailed, mm-hmm. and they didn't seem to be influenced by anything outside.
So the coffee table story passed the credibility test. But how did it meet that probative value requirement that you mentioned? How did it become so central to the case that the court was willing to consider hearsay? Well, remember, the original conviction was really based on the idea that Mary Weaver was the only one responsible for Melissa's death.
Right.
The coffee table story totally changed that. If Melissa was hurt before she was even with Mary Weaver, then it makes you wonder if the shaking was really what killed her.
So this wasn't just like, you know, people gossiping. This hearsay evidence really challenged the whole idea behind the prosecution's case.
Yeah.
And maybe even gave a different explanation for the baby's death. I can see why that would be so important to the case. But even with all that, how do you go from allowing hearsay to actually having a whole new trial? What's the process for that legally?
Getting a new trial based on new evidence isn't easy.
Right.
The courts have to balance trying to get justice with respecting the decisions that were made before.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They can't just reopen every case every time something new comes up.
Right. The legal system needs some kind of closure. Otherwise, cases could just go on forever.
Right.
So what was it about this new evidence that made the court decide a new trial was needed?
Well, in this case, they felt like the chance of a wrong conviction was big enough to outweigh those concerns about finality.
Okay.
The judge had to decide if this new evidence could actually change the outcome of the case.
Uh-huh.
And that's where the expert testimony became really important.
Right.
Remember all the debate in the medical community about shaken baby syndrome?
Yeah.
Well, that became a key issue in deciding whether to have a new trial.
Oh, I see where you're going with this. We have experts on both sides, each with their own take on the evidence. That must have made things really tricky for the court.
It did.
What were the main things the experts disagreed on?
The state's medical experts stuck with what they said originally.
Okay.
They said the coffee table injury was bad, but not bad enough to cause Melissa's death.
Uh-huh.
They were sticking with shaken baby syndrome. But the defense brought in their own experts who had a different argument. They talked about something called a re-bleed.
A re-bleed. What does that mean, and how did it relate to Melissa's injuries?
A re-bleed is like a delayed bleeding in the brain.
Oh.
It can happen after a head injury that doesn't seem that bad at first. You know, there's some bleeding, but it looks like it stops.
Right.
But then maybe hours or even days later, that injury can start bleeding again. And often it's much worse the second time.
So it's like a time bomb. The first hit might not seem bad, but there's this hidden danger.
Right.
And in Melissa's case, the defense experts were saying that the coffee table injury could have caused this re-bleed.
Exactly. And their explanation was pretty convincing. They went into detail about how it works medically, talked about research, and presented a timeline that linked the coffee table injury to a delayed re-bleed as the real cause of Melissa's death.
Wow, that's completely different from what the state's experts were saying. It must have been a tough call for the judge to decide between those two opinions. What finally made the court grant a new trial?
In the end, the judge agreed with the defense experts. The chance of a re-bleed, along with the new witnesses talking about the coffee table injury, created enough doubt to have a new trial. The judge realized that the original conviction was based mostly on the shaken baby syndrome diagnosis, and this new evidence made that diagnosis seem less certain.
This is incredible. We've gone from what seemed like an open and shut case of shaken baby syndrome to a whole new trial with a different theory about how the baby died. And it all comes from a conversation that happened years later. It really shows how important it is to be open-minded and question things, even when we think we have all the answers. But before we get too carried away, you said earlier there was something else to this case, something about a concurring opinion that added another layer to the situation. What was that about?
Right, you mentioned that. So while the judge did decide to have a new trial, one of the justices, Justice Harris, he added a concurring opinion that brought up some really interesting points. Yeah, Justice Harris agreed with having a new trial, but he also cautioned against relying too much on hearsay, especially when it comes up years after everything happened. He understood the possibility that Mary Weaver had been wrongly convicted, but also pointed out that courts need to be super careful when looking at hearsay, no matter how convincing it sounds.
So it sounds like he was struggling with that balance between trying to get justice and following the rules of the legal system. Like, you don't want to throw out important evidence just because it's hearsay, but you also can't just reopen every case every time someone comes up with a new story, especially years later. What were Justice Harris's main worries about using hearsay in this case?
His concerns came from how unreliable hearsay can be. Memories can fade, details get mixed up, and there's a bigger chance of someone changing the story or making things up as time goes by.
Right.
Justice Harris worried that if courts depend too much on hearsay, it could hurt the legal process and make it easy to challenge verdicts based on iffy information.
Yeah, that's a valid point. It seems like a tough job for the courts to find that balance. They have to weigh the good things about new evidence against the problems it might cause by changing old decisions. What are your thoughts on finding that balance?
It's a complicated issue, and there's no easy answer. Each case is different, you know, and you have to look at how strong the new evidence is, what the original conviction was about, and what could happen if you keep the verdict or change it. In this case, because it was a murder conviction and there was a chance she was innocent, that made them decide to have a new trial.
Right.
But Justice Harris's opinion reminds us that courts need to be careful and thoughtful when they deal with hearsay, especially when it shows up a long time after things happened.
It's amazing how one case can bring up so many complicated legal and ethical questions. We started with what seemed like a simple case of shaken baby syndrome, and now we're deep into hearsay, expert opinions, and the whole idea of when a case is really closed. What are some of the big lessons we can learn from State v. Weaver? What should our listeners, especially lawyers and law students, keep in mind when they face situations like this?
I think this case shows us that getting justice is a process, and it takes constant work and careful thinking.
Yeah.
State v. Weaver reminds us that we need to look at all the evidence closely, question what we think we know, and be ready to rethink old convictions when new information comes up. It also highlights how important experts are in cases with complicated medical or scientific stuff, and how courts need to really scrutinize their opinions, making sure they're based on good science and not biased.
I think that's a great point. It's easy to just accept the first explanation we hear, but State v. Weaver shows us that we should always keep asking questions and digging deeper, because the truth is often more complicated than it seems at first.
Exactly. And sometimes those hidden truths, those whispers from the past, can change the whole story and lead to a fairer outcome. State v. Weaver shows how strong our legal system is, how it can adapt and change as we learn more about science, medicine, and how people work.
Well said. This has been a really insightful deep dive into a fascinating case.
Yeah, it has.
State v. Weaver isn't just a legal story. It's about how we try to find justice, which requires us to look at things closely, think things through, and be open to challenging our own beliefs.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll be back next time with another look into the legal world. Until then, keep questioning, keep learning, and keep searching for the truth.